If this was perfect, it wouldn't be.
Hello, this is Pedro de Permit, and thank you for listening to the Scalf Podcast. I know I sure as hell would never listen to it, but enjoy it while it lasts.
Welcome to the Scoffcast. My name's Hank Hershey. I'm the creative director at Southern Culture on the Fly magazine, and I'm here tonight at the hunting cabin of Caleb Goodwin in Raymer, Alabama. We're recording on a rainy night after a big day of bass fishing at Purcell Farms. We won't reveal too much about our experience there quite yet because we have some pretty awesome content to share in our next issue, which is coming out on May
21st.
Scoff 51. The title of the issue is Reservoir Bow Hogs, and we're going to be talking about bass fishing and impoundments and quite a lot of other chicanery. But the reason we're gathered around this table tonight drinking moonshine from Wilkes County, North Carolina, is to discuss the state of the film industry in the Southeast, particularly the fly fishing film industry. And we just wanted to talk about stuff we like and celebrate some triumphs in the industry and I don't know, just sort of try to wrap our heads around what this form of media is really doing for us and where we see it going in the near future. Also in the room, we've got John Agricola, our managing editor, Scott Stevenson, our Waverly Wizard of merchandising. We've got Sam Bailey, our ad director, of course, our gracious host, Caleb Goodwin, and the moonshine runner himself, Alan Broyhill. Thank you for all you do, Alan. That was a big gulp, bud.
It's in your eye.
So, John, why don't you talk a little bit about your ideas for this discussion, how it sort of came up, and maybe we'll just get the ball rolling that way.
Sure. One of the things that I think is important for me as an angler is, like, you know, when your reach as a fisherman is only the places around you, your eyes aren't open to the rest of the world and all the possibilities for fly fishing. So, you know, as a teacher, I noticed that a lot of the kids that I was teaching had very short attention spans, and it was a result of the phone in their pocket and the way that everything we enjoy now is so compressed and short, but it's having an effect in dopamine in terms of people coming into this industry. And, you know, everybody wants to see the fish eat, and that's great, but there's a longer history of presenting fly fishing as a visual sport that goes back to Guy de Valdin and tarpon, and I want us to all have a conversation about that. But going back even further, it's just the South. You know, the representation of the South in general has always been slippery terrain because often it was people from the North or people from out West that were more educated than people in the South, because prosperity was low for such a long time. People didn't necessarily go to college or, you know, even finish high school. So you have a history of photographers coming South and shooting what they think to be a representation of the South, but it's a much more diverse place than that. Like, you think about Margaret Burkwhite and Erskine Caldwell's, you have seen their faces, and you're looking at, you know, toothless Southerners, you know, in a soy field or something, or cotton field. And, you know, we're not there anymore, but representation is always an interesting conversation to have, and who's doing the presenting of what it means to be Southern.
That's a really good point. I think it's interesting now that, you know, historically there's never been any control on who gets to represent you. Like, you know, we sort of joke from Monty Python, like, well, I didn't vote for you, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like people just sort of claim to show their perception, and it's sort of just whether they say it's reality or you know, a panacea or not, it just sort of gets interpreted that way because it gets incorporated into the zeitgeist, mm-hmm. so to speak. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are a lot of people responsible for really good filmmaking and really authentic filmmaking in the Southeast, and I think one of the best examples of that is Guido Lavaldin's Tarpon movie, which was kind of the original fish porno.
Yeah, on celluloid, actually.
Yeah. It was interesting because he had so many voices from all over the country. Like, you know, Jim Harrison was in that. He's from Michigan.
Brodigan
was in it.
McGuane.
Tom McGuane's in it. So it's not really all Southerners, but it is an inherently Southern endeavor to try to catch a tarpon. And that film does such an awesome job because of the perspectives it brings, but also just the glory of it and the story.
You had the Jimmy Buffett soundtrack too.
Oh yeah, scored by Jimmy Buffett.
And I don't know if you've ever listened to that besides the film, ever listened to that soundtrack, but it's Aquarium Drunkard. Are you familiar with that the blog guy, Aquarium Drunkard? He did a article on that, and you know, he put a lot of the Buffett excerpts up there, and I love that music. I mean, it's great stuff. I mean, it's not Jimmy Buffett, what people think of Jimmy Buffett.
It's kind of funny to think about a bum in Key West scoring a film and composing music.
Another interesting thing about that film is Vaughn Cochran was in that film when they were doing a regional kind of look at the Keys in general. Like, they were showing pirate gold and things, and then there was this scene of somebody strumming on their stomach, like is it a xylophone? I don't know. I don't even know what the musical instrument was, but it's the thing that's like they're scratching on their
like stomach. A washboard.
Washboard. Yeah. Well, Vaughn's put
not
some
a xylophone.
Art in. What is it? What did I say?
Xylophone.
Washboard abs.
I don't know.
Probably washboard.
Only Alan
pretty
has
Southern,
those in here.
I would think.
So how do you know Vaughn again?
So I met Vaughn. He's connected with Black Fly Lodge. We had, I think, our second issue. We went to the Bahamas, and he was there, and he helped us with the art that went in that issue. He did some pop art permits and stuff, and he's a friend of the magazine.
You know what Wassail is, by the way?
Yes.
That's what drinking this moonshine, like, it's, yeah. This is really good, and I could drink it all year, but it feels very Christmassy to me.
It is like Wassail.
Yeah.
But better, because you get drunk off that, not necessarily off Wassail.
Am I getting drunk off that?
We're just tasting it.
Just tasting it, buddy.
I'm just saying you could. You could get drunk off that.
Like, progressing into the conversation a little bit, can y'all, like, think of an early film or group that was making maybe films in the South that were interesting to you when you were coming into fly fishing and it sort of fueled the fire?
Tim Borski. Borski Ties.
Yeah.
That's, you know, South Florida, Everglades. We used to sit at the fly shop and watch the Borski Ties Flies films.
Over and over again.
Yeah, and it was one of the coolest, the way he did it. It was interesting because you would sit down, he would explain a fly, talk about it, tie it, and then say, all right, now let's go fish it. And he'd be in his canoe out in the Everglades, and he would, you know, there's the fish porn that we all love, using that fly, showing you how to kind of use the fly without really saying, oh, this is how you use the fly, but using the fly, catching fish. And I think, you know, there's probably needs to be some more of that, or something new, you know, coming of, you know, that type of film. But that was always one that I know Scott and I watched that for hours. I think there was like four or five of them, maybe. And,
maybe.
And we would just watch them over and over and over again. It was so much fun. It was good.
Dave Scadden.
That's not Southern, but yeah.
Watching his inflatable promotional videos.
Yeah. Most people listening to this probably aren't old enough to
remember. I did run into some other day who knew about Dave Scadden.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. We used to go to, this is about 2005, 2006, somewhere in there. We went to the it was my first and Scott's first Caslow Shallow Water Fishing Festival. And it was in Atlantis, where the Fly Fishing Film Tour is now, though. But we went around, we'd talk to all these people and look at boats and all this. And Dave Scadden had his booth set up. And back then, they would give you a little, like, you know, cardboard sleeve with a DVD in it that had their products, and it had fish porn on it. I mean, it was a bunch of fish, and it was showing their products. I have a Scadden one. I have an old beaver tail with the old the original B1.
Yeah.
I had a Gordon Boatworks one somewhere. I don't know where it is. I wish I could find it because it was awesome. But yeah, it had those, and then we got the In Search of a Rising Tide.
Yep. I think part of the reason why films back then were made so well was because they were so hard to distribute and get a hold of.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, you can just make any kind of junk on your phone and blast it out there, yeah, and you don't even have to think about it. Like,
that's right.
Before, you had to hire a director to put a commercial out,
yeah,
you know, and now everybody's promoting their stuff with all these stupid reels on Instagram, and they're like lip syncing and shit and embarrassing themselves. And
there's, you know, there's a super high volume.
No one's handing out DVDs anymore.
Right. It seems like it's hard to even find good fish porn these days. Like, I mean, there's some people doing it and doing it well, and we can talk about those. But now, like, just searching YouTube, like, for a memory that you had 15 years ago of a film, it can be difficult to find it.
You got to wade through a lot.
Well, you got to wade through a lot more. That's right.
Yeah. Well, talking about difficult, so we're kind of, I was just looking on my phone to see if I could purchase a copy of The Hatch. Are you familiar with that? You know what that is?
I think so. That's the Felt Soul?
Yeah, the first one.
The first one, yeah.
They let it, you could download it. I may have bought it online somehow, but they sold it on, you know, a physical DVD for a while. There's nowhere you can find it to buy it. Have y'all ever seen it?
No.
Okay.
I saw it because my cousin lives in Montrose, Colorado, and that's close to where they're from. And we got to see it because they had a DVD of it. That's the only reason I saw it.
It's a salmon fly hatch on the Gunnison, and it was like their first foray into filmmaking. And they go in and they do their typical Felt Soul, you know, magic. But you saw it, and you're like, these guys have something. And all the music they play, music is very important. All the music they played in that film, I downloaded and looked up and tried to Napster or whatever at the time it was, figure out what it was. And that's who those guys are. And every film they've done, I have figured out, like, discovered music from their films, which I don't do that with hardly anybody.
Yeah, because it's all dubstep now.
Yeah.
Another thing Scott's big on is no talking in films. So, I mean, it's a lot of music.
Yeah,
fish. Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear how amazing it is and how therapeutic it is to be on the water. We all know. Yeah. Just
just a story being shown.
If you got to tell somebody about it, it takes away from it, in my opinion, but.
Going back to the whole nostalgia thing, you know, we talk about, like, stuff we remember and maybe the original greatest hits of fly fishing films, but, like, most of them are not from the South. I mean, can you think of any from the Southeast? Maybe Walker's Key Chronicles?
Mm-hmm. Walker's K.
Yeah.
That we're all going blind as this jar is passed around.
Yeah, Wassel's hidden, isn't it?
One that I'm thinking of that Scott would like, that may be South, but it also had a very diverse content set, was 406 Productions. I think that was the name of it. But it was all music and all fishing for, like, a very particular species, and they covered the gamut of different topics. Like, they did a paddlefish one, and, like, they weren't fly fishing for the paddlefish, but that was the only one they weren't fly fishing. There was a lot of steelhead, but they also did the Keys, and they had this decentralized approach where everybody in 406 Productions wasn't necessarily, like, it wasn't like a small group like us. It was like, you know, people that were making their own film, sending it to 406 Productions, and they were producing it. That's my understanding of it, I think. But they had pretty good tunes, and if you hadn't in 2005 or four, whenever I started seeing it, I had never seen somebody catch a permit before. And so that was the first time my love for permit fishing was ignited, even though it would take me 20 years to go.
Like, I remember Scott and I sitting in the shop, and I'll say this a lot about when we're talking about old times, because we used to sit there in tie flies and watch VHS, because there wasn't that many DVDs out
like
yet.
Like the how-tos with Kelly Gallup.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Just yeah. Stuff like that. But the Drake magazine, 5 minutes of fly fishing. It was, I think it was the first year. This was 04, 05.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in my shop, and we're like, dude, we're doing this. We're getting in this fly fishing film game that we're gonna do it. I mean, there's nothing out. The tour wasn't out. There was nothing like that yet. And like I said, there was you could buy some DVDs. Usually you had to go to a show to find a DVD, even. Like, just nothing good out there. And we were so excited about that. And here we are, 20 years later, we still hadn't made a fucking video. It's time.
There's a lot of moving parts.
Well, we have. We've got one, but it hasn't been put out there yet. But yeah, still talking about it.
I mean, we have music we've been talking about picked out for this thing for 20 years too.
I have 15 different awesome video stories that would be great to do if we just did them. But,
he brought up John brought up 4 to 6. The one that I've watched, I don't know how many times, is only on Vimeo. Or Vimeo, or however you say it, I don't know. It's kind of like the cool guy YouTube, in my opinion. But
yeah, but you sound a lot more cultured when you know how to pronounce it.
I think it's Vimeo. Vimeo. But it's one in winter. It's Ryan Peterson. He's following a guy steelhead fishing, and it's just a great, great film about this guy pursuing steelhead. And at the end of the film, I'm going to kind of ruin it. He catches one. But they have this microphone song called The Pull. I wasn't too familiar with the microphones, but I downloaded that song as soon as I heard that. And it's like synced up perfectly when he catches the steelhead. It's like the perfect moment where the song kicks in. But I love that film, and I asked some steelhead guys out west. I was like, tell me about this film. They're like, that's as legit as it gets, and I still go back and watch it. Still grainy and fuzzy, but I love watching it.
Yeah. Do you guys think drones have improved or destroyed the film industry for fly fishing?
Well, the correct answer is it always depends. You know, how are they using the drone? I think Declan does a really good job shooting stills with it. But, like, you know, there's people that use it terribly. Like, I tried to make a film one time, and I had a drone operator come, and he had no idea what he was doing. I mean, the shadow of the drone was right over the fish. It was spooking the fish. Like, I made it anyway because I was usable. I mean, I'd spent the time to do it, so I thought I would try, but it's very challenging to use a drone effectively nowadays, I think.
It's not about if it's made it.
Because it takes away from storytelling.
But does it, though? I mean, it just gives you a better view, right? It can enhance it. It's all about how it's used. It definitely is attitude, because before people were getting flying shots, it was just up to the person who had, you know, $10,000 to rent a helicopter to do it. Mm-hmm. So now they're able to do it with a, you know, $300 drone.
Right.
So it's definitely made it more obtainable.
But now everybody also has access to satellite imagery on their phone.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know. I like it. I think it's good. I like the shots that you get from it. I like a lot of the stuff from it.
They're pretty vanilla now. It's like the same shots every time and everything.
It's hard. It's hard to aim a camera differently when you're pointing it straight down. It's hard to get interesting angles. But it is cool because you totally rely on the place. Like, there's no way to, like, zhuzh it up and make it more artsy with a drone. It's like, you're either in a cool place or you're not. And if you're pointing a drone at it and you're in a cool place, chances are you're going to get a cool shot.
To me, it's cool because it opens it up for anybody. Now, it's up to you or the person using it whether or not they know how to use it and figure out how to get the shots, right? Because before, it was only the, you know, only the guy that could afford a helicopter could do those same shots, so I like it.
I'll tell you one guy who uses a drone really well, Holt Ingalls. He works for
he does
Hatchie. Hatchie Productions in Opelika. He's done some work for the bait shop before, and he's a FPV drone pilot. He can fly one of them little ones. Like he does a lot of like real estate stuff, where he will fly a drone through a window in somebody's lake house and like go under a lady holding a tray of deviled eggs, and then like go through all the rooms, and it looks like, you know, you're kind of in all the rooms at once because he's flying it around so fast. But he's wearing goggles and he's piloting this thing going 80 miles an hour through these corridors in somebody's house. It's just amazing what he's able to do with that drone. So I take back what I said about, you know, every shot's the same, because it's really not if you have the right equipment.
He told me not to get off on tangents, by the way. We're still talking about filming.
Well, he did look. He did some filming with Scott and I last year, the little project we were working on, and he pulled out the drone and he's like, y'all just stay that way down here. We'll be up there. Just don't look at the drone. And he flew that thing buzzing in and out around us, man.
Tight canopy.
I mean, dude, super tight canopy, trying to cast fly rods. And I'm like, we're gonna get tangled up. And he was good. He was all over it. It was pretty awesome.
It's a little weird, though, when you're casting and it's like 2 feet above your head.
Yeah.
Bumblebee's coming.
So John and I were texting with Grossman last week, and he posted a picture of his set. He had two rods rigged up by his vehicle. One was a bamboo rod, and he said he bought it from Schlitzky before he moved out west.
Schlitzky business.
And I mentioned to him, I was like, well, Schlitzky's the one that introduced me to Drag the River, which is his band from Fort Collins, Colorado. About to go on a tangent here. And so I have all their stuff, you know, downloaded. You can't stream in their stuff. It's super aggravating. But anyway, I have an album that those guys made for Matt for a video he did called Rattlesnake Creek, where he just filmed him and his buddy fishing this little creek with their bamboo rods and for, you know, trout, Colorado somewhere, I'm guessing. It's still on YouTube. I just looked, and it's cool. It's like 2 minutes long. It's cool, but Drag the River recorded three songs for him for that film, and I downloaded that little EP sometime like 20 years ago.
But I love when the worlds collide. When I think the recipe for a great fly fishing film is, you need at least two of these three things. One, a really good story with good writing. Two, really good action, like good shots. And three, really good music.
Yeah.
If you have two out of those three, I think you've got a pretty decent film.
Yeah.
If you've got all three, you've got an award winner.
And that's what Feltzold does.
And the cool thing is I think the way to make that is to rope people in who do it better than you do, right? Like, if you're a good writer, go find a musician. If you're a good musician and you love fly fishing, go find a good filmmaker. Like, I think right now everybody thinks they can do it all on their own, and so they skip all the other stuff. They buy a drone and they're like, well, I'm a movie maker now. And then they miss out on having good music and good writing, good storytelling. And it's just like, it turns into this like massive pool of stuff that is only one out of three. And it's increasingly difficult to find the two or the three out of three films, even though the film tour does a pretty decent job of collecting some of those things.
And that's an important point, I think, is we often rush into things without doing the process, and rather than rushing in because you just got a new drone, you know, spend some time in the space. You know, I'm saying this, but it's not really a caveat, because it's not like we're putting out films. That's not really what we do as a magazine. Maybe we'll dabble in it someday, but like, we're critics. I mean, we understand the culture. We try to understand the culture, even though that we're mostly toothless Southerners. But
we make really good pies.
We make really good pies. That's right.
Hey, do you remember, I know you're a Drake magazine guy. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Feeding Time? Did you ever watch that?
No, tell me about it.
Tom's first, he put out a little collection of fishing videos and called it Feeding Time, sold the DVD.
Oh, I never knew.
You never knew about it?
What year is it?
I think I still have a physical copy. Early 2000s.
Okay. I didn't start following until 2006.
And he's only got one thing in there on the South, and it's emblazoned in my memory. It's Callaway Gardens, and there's a guy that throws a bluegill out to try to catch this big old bass with the bluegill, sound familiar? Anybody? But yeah. Anyway. Yeah,
the first Tom movie that I saw was the Mangum for Tom's Tarpon.
Yeah, yeah. But this is like a little, it's like, anyway, it was kind of the first thing. It got his little awards thing.
Not enough can be said about having up all those short films that were part of the award ceremony on his website for so long.
Right. Because, but my point was, he's got this DVD, and the only thing from the South is this little thing on Callaway Gardens with the guys catching a bass with a live bluegill, and that's it.
This is how they fly fish in the South. This is bait.
This really resonates with me and my catfish love.
Well, anyway, I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Thanks, Tom.
That was a good
anyway,
one.
No, I mean, I appreciate everything he's done, but I definitely.
It is easy to caricaturize the South as a bunch of barbarians.
But you know what? Y'all just stay out west and up north and wherever you are. Don't come here. The fishing's terrible unless you're using live bluegills.
I wanted quickly to give a shout out to some things that we actually really like in the film industry right now. We don't have time to talk about everything we like, but some stuff is happening recently. Some stuff has been put out that we really appreciate, and we think people are doing a good job, and we want to give them a shout out. So first we wanted to say to our friend Declan Rogers down in New Smyrna, keep up the good work at Bajio. Your recent work with Jay Johnson on
Fishing with Easy, the barber,
was great.
We need to see more of that in the space, I think, because it's so much about not just inclusivity and the importance of hard work and learning a craft like fly fishing. I mean, Easy's caught his first redfish on this little shore of 15 minutes or so. And it's an incredible story that they're telling in that compressed amount of time, because you've got him first doing his work, which is cutting Jay's hair. And then Jay teaches him his work, which is, casting a fly rod accurately at a redfish.
Amazing how quickly he stressed accuracy. Uh-huh. It's like, don't just learn how to cast this thing.
I thought Jay was just a tattoo artist.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that. But
they're both in the aesthetics.
Hey, Alan, how hard is it to catch a redfish on a fly?
He doesn't have a mic, Sam.
So good job,
Declan. Good job, Declan. But Declan had some help with that one. I'm not sure who the other filmmakers were. Declan just covered the second half of the day, but he did a good job, and we're proud of him for putting out a good film. Jay did a good job too.
Yeah, Jay.
Jay's got such a great.
He's just like a giant ball of charisma.
Right, he is.
Yeah.
Talking about Jay, man. That's another one. Old Geofish.
That's a great
Geobass.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Geofish makes me a little tingly.
I think I did say it to Jay one time. The one thing that bothered me about the way they did stuff was it was like really just in your face, quick, jumbled up, like cut. It was hard to follow, but God, I loved it. It was so great. Lots of great stuff there. He's been doing it for a long time.
I think the Mexico bass fishing. That always loved that little
with the cartel that showed up. Yeah.
Well, they're getting shot at across the lake.
In the F-250 converted to biodiesel and putting two guinus
on the
top.
I liked the mothership the mothership peacock bass one. I thought that one was cool.
Yeah. He's done some awesome stuff, that whole group, but Jay's been a part of all that for years.
Yeah, I was gonna say Jay wasn't part of that first one or two. He wasn't part of Trout Bum 1 or 2.
Not at Trout Bum stuff, but those, but when they started doing the other stuff together with him and what Thad and Chris and all them.
We watched those videos over and over and over again. Just wasn't a whole lot out there. And they were good, but there wasn't a whole lot out there. And thanks to those guys that they provided some
yeah.
much needed content.
They did. They all kicked in the door.
I really liked the Argentina one.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part of the easy, you know, short film was when Easy has just caught his redfish. He's had a couple of days of struggle, and he had tied a fly to catch the fish, and he named the fly Waukesha at the end of it. And to this day, I'm such a square.
I think it's just a woman's name. I think he's sort of just like...
Oh, damn, I missed yeah, it again.
I hope not. Your whiteness, is...
Do we want to give a shout-out to Andrew at Taylor Trash?
I think we should.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Gilbert, they did the Ride with Clyde for this year's... the International Fly Fishing Film Festival. That's a mouthful.
Where did they get Clyde for that?
Oh, some asshole in Alabama.
I don't know who that was.
Oh, did somebody put a bunch of money into fixing up Clyde so they can make that film?
Yeah, but it's not about the money. You know, they made a great film, and they gave us so much credit when they said, Clyde was in Alabama, so we had to go pick him up. Nah, Cola didn't fix the fuel lines or, you know, put a new gas tank on it or, you know, get the rat out of it.
We should have left the rat in it.
We should have left the rat in
that
it.
That was a great
We should have put more
rats
in it before we dropped it off.
But I will say this, that I bonded so much with Clyde before they called my journalistic father, Tom Bai, and got him to get me to take Clyde to Tennessee. Which me and Dad drove him to Chattanooga, and they met us.
With Sam.
And Sam was there, of course. Thanks, buddy. I couldn't have done it without
we had a,
you.
That was a fun day, though.
It was a fun day.
We had
lunch
meal.
With Chase. And,
yep, Chase Pritchett came and met us for lunch.
But, like, the thing is that, like, I loved Clyde so much after that year and a half that he spent in my barn that I kind of felt like a parental, like, sense of joy when they made such a good film about him.
It was great. Andrew's... videography skills are amazing. He does great.
It was
a great story. You know, for a fishing film, there wasn't a whole lot of fish caught.
but at least they understood that. Yeah.
But I mean, when we were watching it in the thing, and Larry's a good friend of mine. I've known Larry for, I don't know, 12 years now. And I've met Mark and Ben and Andrew through the years. Just good guys. They did an awesome job. It was the funniest film, probably most well done film in the tour, in our opinion. And that's me, you know, I'm a little biased, but John's not a little biased at all, and he loved it.
I loved it.
So it, you know, they did a great job, and just need more fun stuff like that. There is really great fishing in this. No, wait a minute. The fishing in the South sucks. Don't come here. But there is really great fishing in the South. But I love a film that can put it out there that, hey, guess what? We bombed on fishing, but gosh damn, we had a good time.
That's right.
You know, and it shows that. So that's a huge part of it.
I think we're all going to have a really good time when the cicadas start coming out in
yes.
a month.
We all don't get to catch big, giant 9-pound bass.
They've started showing up. So we're recording this podcast on, what's the date?
It's
April
20th.
420. 420.
420. 420.
I have exercised the demons.
But we just wanted to let everybody, just remind everybody that on May the 10th, we will begin the first ever virtual cicada fly only fly fishing tournament. They've already started hatching.
Popping off near Augusta.
They're emerging near Augusta. And
folks, we have a live update.
We've got a couple bugs coming off
update.
In Columbus. They're coming off near in the Oconee National Forest. They're coming off near Columbia, South Carolina. They're coming off in the Francis Marion and Sumter National Forests. They're coming off pretty good in Charlotte, but not quite yet. You're going to see more bugs coming off in the northerly latitudes later in the season, but it's really, really starting to kick off down here, and we're excited about it.
Good thing is we're going to release this podcast after the fishing's done, so you don't have a clue where they
are. No, but when the podcast comes out, you will probably have caught your first carp already, but there will be still some time to win some prizes in our tournament. So go to southernculturonthefly.com/the-emergence-convergence. And you'll find all the information you need about our virtual tournament. And you can sign up. You can win free shit for doing absolutely nothing, unless the absolutely nothing that you do is not funny. So go see what you can win and how. Sign up. Give us your email address so we can sell it to the government. And if you want to give us your social security number, that would also be great.
That'd be really helpful.
Not mandatory. Swear. But come fish the Emergence Convergence and be on the lookout for some cicada merchandise coming soon to the Scoff store, and start to get a little bit stoked for Scoff 51, our 51st issue.
Come down to Alabama, book Colo on a carp fishing trip to cicadas on
Carcosa.
Cicada.
There's one little graphic.
This wassail has got my tongue tied.
We've gone blind now. I can't see. I can't see. Sleep.
And cut.
Cicada Mania.